Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The weekly podcast where we explore our daily anomalies, bringing to life short stories by fantastic writers never heard in audio format. A weekly mini audiobook about life and befuddlement just for you. This week, we have a couple traveling stories from Sarah Lofgren, who you'll find on Medium.com. And here is Sparkling Still or Infused with the Blood of the Last Tourist Who Chose Wrong. You're going to want to get this one right. Hello, American. Are you traveling to Europe this summer for likes and LOLs? Then you've come to the right place. There are lots of articles promising to help Americans navigate the rituals of those who didn't grow up beneath the watchful eye of the Eagle of Freedom. It turns out not having to say the Pledge of Allegiance each morning in kindergarten leads to all sorts of questionable behavior, such as dipping French fries in mayonnaise. Mayonnaise, I know. But this article is special, and not just because it purrs when you pat its belly. If you want to get those sweet European Instagram shots to impress your friends and family, first you need to prepare for the biggest challenge any American can face. It'll come when you're weak and tired and you don't expect it. Your feet are hurting because you managed to visit 5.3 churches, 10 fountains, and 67 oil paintings of Madonna and Child within your first 3 hours. Hey, you think, I should go to a cafe and sit down. That is a quintessential European experience. Plus, those little tables are cute. Plus, if I stand up for one more minute, I might need to start a lawsuit against the person who designed these walking shoes. So you collapse into a chair and watch as a polite but stressed-out waiter approaches. Hello. He, she, they says in a charming accent. Accents are so charming when you understand them. What can I bring you? Probably you order a croissant, because it is a croissant, so duh. And what would you like to drink? Water, please, you say, thinking that will be the simple and easy choice. My poor naive child, you don't hear the faint sound of thunder, don't notice the darkening of the sky. You still think this is supposed to be fun. Still or gas? The waiter asks. What the hell? Still or gas? What kind of question is that? In America, water is water. It comes from a mountain stream, and then a billionaire puts it in a plastic bottle and marks it up 230% like God intended. Apparently in Europe, they've developed both water that doesn't move around and water that has a digestive system capable of producing gas. Your mind is spinning and you don't know whether this is evidence of European superiority or a sign that all countries that have been around for longer than 300 years should be wiped from the map. You try to answer, but the words don't come, and the waiter can see the confusion smeared across your face. He, she, they lean in closer, lowering their voice. There is also a third option. For you, I can do this. We also serve water infused with the blood of the last tourist who chose wrong. It is, how do you say, very special. This is a good time to grab your things and choke out the words, "Looks like I'm not so thirsty after all," then limp away as quickly as you can. Still or gas? I'd like to tell you which answer is correct. Isn't that what articles like this are supposed to do? I have my suspicions, but I cannot accept the responsibility of advising you on which water to order, getting it wrong, and have you end up on the menu. On my recent trip, I dealt with this quandary by never, ever ordering any water and instead only asking for coffee and wine, then taking periodic gulps out of historic fountains when no one was looking. So that's probably what you should do. Or just stay in America, where we only infuse things with lavender and subtext. And here is my first flight on lorazepam. Let's do this. I hate flying. I hate flying so much that it has become a key component of my personality. Other people like bands or falling in love or having an interesting job that they can tell people about. Not me. I just have terror and shakes and queasy tummy. My husband has permanent thumbprints in his arm from where I grip him during turbulence. It's just turbulence, he says. I don't want to die like this, I say. Because lately, every time I step onto a plane, it feels like I'm supposed to make peace with my mortality. And I'm just not ready to be okay with dying. Being alive has been mostly great for me. I know what the brave people are thinking. They're thinking logically. They want to tell me the odds. Don't tell me the odds, people. I know all the odds. Yes, the odds of dying in a plane crash are lower than the odds of dying on the way to the airport. This does not help. So today I'm flying on lorazepam. This is the good stuff, my doctor said when she prescribed it to me. You're going to like it. No booze, you will die. Also, it's extremely addictive, so use it for flying and nothing else. Lorazepam is an anti-anxiety medication that works well for situations like mine, events that occur every once in a while and not all the damn time. I've been nervous for a month, nervous about flying and nervous that the lorazepam won't do its job and I'll end up locked in a sky tube with tears streaming down my face. I am an ugly crier, so this scenario is not ideal. I tested a half dose 3 days before the flight. Don't want any mid-air surprises. All I felt was a little lighter, a little less worried about my upcoming flight, which was greatly appreciated. So the day of my flight is here, the moment I've been dreading. Lorazepam is supposed to take 20 to 40 minutes to kick in, so I took it about 30 minutes before takeoff in Seattle. It did not kick in on time, so I did my whole song and dance routine where I make squeaking noises while trying to initiate eye contact with the flight attendants, a futile attempt to absorb some of their nonchalance into my body. If I ever see a freaked out flight attendant, I will probably lose my shit. Actually, that happened once, above Tokyo. I lost my shit. It wasn't pretty. Cry. An hour after I took the pill, I started to feel calmer. I still had symptoms of hypervigilance, but the freak-out factor was much lower. I put on my headphones and spent some time with my chill-out playlist. It wasn't the worst. I did expect lorazepam to knock me out a bit, but I was awake and alert for the full flight, despite operating on maybe 2 hours of sleep. I also expected to maybe have some goofy behavior to tell you guys about, some drugged exploits to make you laugh, but I was so normal you wouldn't even believe it. I think the person sitting next to me even mistook me for a normie, which, when you think about it, is a little weird. The first leg of my flight was from Seattle to Newark, about 4.5 hours. Now I'm sitting in a lounge in Newark eating free cheese and writing this article. The effects of the pill are still going strong, so I'm extremely zen for someone who is about to step inside what could at any moment become a flaming death trap and drop my charred corpse into the ocean. Ahead of me is a 7-hour flight and a 2-hour flight. I'm basically Frodo walking into Mordor, and like Frodo, I will prevail with the help of my tiny little happy pills. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this story or my podcast, please share and let me know. And if you want to hear multiple stories like this multiple times per week, please become my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page.